So today, being it's Parshas Naso, we're going to ask the age-old question, is it good to be a Nazir, is it bad to be a Nazir? And I find that when I ask people that question, it depends. People seem to be convinced one way or the other based on their own inclination. In other words, if there are people who, they tend to be individuals who like moderation, so then they'll say, oh, the Torah clearly is not happy with the Nazir. And if there's someone who likes going to the extremes once in a while, then they're like, oh, of course, the Torah loves the Nazir. So like sometimes when you ask people, you sometimes can maybe get a little of, you know, someone's own reading, someone's own, you know, inclination. But so what I want to try to do is I want to just go through some of the sources and try to provide what I think is the Torah's approach. Or see the different views and the evidence support each view as to whether the Torah is a fan of the Nazir, whether the Torah is not a fan of the Nazir. So the first thing we have to do is we have to analyze what are the rules of the Nazir so that we can sort of figure out, you know, like how we feel about the Nazir. So this is in Bamidbar Perek Vav Pasuk Gimel. The Torah tells us that after a person says he's going to be a Nazir, so the Torah says, Miyayin v'shechar yazir, chomet jarim v'chomet shechar lo yishteh, v'chom yishrat anabim lo yishteh. So we don't engage in alcoholic beverages. We don't engage in wine and other intoxicating beverages. So that is one rule. If you skip to Pasuk Hey, the second rule is, Kol yamei neder nizro, all the days when he is in a state of nizirus. So the Torah says, tar lo yavor al rosho. He's not going to have a razor pass over his head. In other words, he's not going to shave. No haircuts, no shaving. And then the third rule is, pasuk vav, kol yamei haziro la Hashem al nefesh meis lo yavo. Tuma is a no-no. He also cannot come in contact with a corpse. And even to his family members, father, mother, brother, sister. So we have these three rules. The restrictions of the Nazir, again, include wine, tumah, haircuts, and shaving. Now, what is the evidence that the Nazir is good? If I were to ask you, what do you think the evidence is that the Nazir is good from your knowledge of?
Similar to a little bit like the Kohen, you know, Kohen Gadol.
Okay. In what way? Oh, so you're, oh, that's interesting. So you're saying he has similar rules to the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol's good, right? We like Kohen Gadol.
Yes. So can't go to funeral of his parents.
Okay. So it's right. You could say that the Torah is providing rules for the Nazir of how he could achieve an elevated status. So the Torah thinks it's a good idea. If the Torah thought it was a bad idea, he wouldn't provide these kind of rules.
Only temporary, right? The Kohen is all his life, right?
Okay.
Here is only because of time.
Yeah. Right. It's a temporary. Right. That's true. You know, Rashi points out, I'm going to look here, make it a little bigger. So Rashi points out that, hold on. Rashi points out very famously in Perek Vav Pasuk Beis, Ki yafli yafrish, when a person separates. Lama nismacha parshas nazir, the parsha sota. What's the linkage between the section of nazir to the section of sota? Because the obligation of nazir, or the nazir ritual follows the section of sota, and that's just something that the Torah pays attention to. Right? It's not only what the Torah says, but context is critical. Especially if you're dealing with mitzvahs, why when God commanded Moshe about a bunch of things, so God intentionally chose to issue commands of one next to each other. It wasn't randomly. And Chazal pick up on that. So why is the section of Nazir immediately follow the section of Sota? So Rashi says, Lomar lach, shekol aroa sota bikilkula yazir atzal bidayayit, Shehu mevi lidei nius, because he says that anyone who sees the sota in her state of degradation will separate himself from wine, because wine can lead to inappropriate relationships because adultery, because you lose yourself, obviously, if you get intoxicated. So it seems that this is a good thing, that the person is engaging in astringency because he's seen the bad, that led to sota. So he's trying to be a little bit removed, a little bit holier. So that's the evidence which seems to indicate that Nazir is good. Why might you say the Nazir is bad or the Torah is not so happy with it? What evidence would you say, what evidence would point to maybe the Nazir not being so great?
The Korban,
right. So the Torah tells us that at the end of his Nazirus day, so at the end of his Nazirus time, so the Torah says in Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud Gimel, V'zoz Torah Sanazir B'yom Malos Yimein Yisrael. This is the law of the Nazir when he completes his days of Nazirus. Yavi Oso El Pesach Olamoy. He's going to be brought to the opening of the Mishkan. V'kriv Es Korbano LaShem. He's going to bring his sacrifice. What is that? Keves Ben Shnosol Tavi V'chad Lola V'chav Sa'achas B'Shnosol Tavi L'Chatas. He's going to bring a Korban Ola. And he's also going to bring Korban Chatas. And Ayelachat Tavi L'Shlomim. He's going to bring Shlomim. One of the three sacrifices that he brings is the Korban Chatas, which is a sin offering. So that would indicate that he engaged in sin. So, right? That's why he's bringing a sin offering. He shouldn't have done this. Okay, we have rules for it, but it's not great. You really shouldn't do it. The Rambam in Hilchos Deos, right? Rambam is known as a consummate moderate. You should follow the middle path, the Shvila Zahav, the golden mean in the middle. And the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, Perakim Aloch Aleph, writes, Shema Yomar Adah, maybe a person will say, Hova Kineva Taiva Kova Chayotubahem Derech Rahein Umotzina Sadamida Olav, that since jealousy and desire and honor and similar traits are part of the bad path and they, you know, remove someone from this world, and they're very bad for a person's life in this world. Efrosh Mehen Bioser Vesrachek Lutzarachon. So I'm going to distance from them completely, and I'm going to go to the other extreme. Ad Shelo Yochal Basar Veloyshte Yayv Lo Yisa Isha Veloyshte Bedira Noah Veloyubash Mabush Noah. Until maybe someone will say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm not going to eat meat. I'm not going to drink wine. I'm not going to marry a woman. I'm not going to live in a nice house. I'm not going to wear nice clothing. I'm going to wear sackcloth and really hard wool. And I'm going to behave in a similar fashion like the pagan priests. Gamza derech rahi. This is also a bad way. You're not allowed to go in this fashion. If you go in this direction, you're called a sinner. Sharehu Omer Benazir, because the Torah says, with regard to the Nazir, V'chiper Olav Me'asher Chata Ala Nefesh. So, because, and that you have to atone for the fact that you committed a sin. Amru Chachamim, right? So, Amru Chachamim, the sages say, Umayim Nazir Shalom Perish Elam Min Ayayin Tzarech Kapara, that if a Nazir who only separated from wine, he needs atonement. Certainly, if you withhold everything, all physical, you know, pleasures, you certainly are a sinner. So the Rambam clearly views the Nazir in a negative way, and the Rambam believes that you bring a sin offering at the end of the days at the end of the time when you are a Nazir, because you have to atone. You did something, the Torah allows you to engage in this extreme behavior. It's the kind of thing that's interesting, right? That sometimes you would say, why would the Torah make rules for you if it's not a good thing? So it could be that sometimes the Torah recognizes that there are some people who feel the need to be extreme. That's not an ideal. So it could be to keep you in check. The Torah even has rules for someone who's going to be an extremist. Now, you still need rules for an extremist. I mean, it's an interesting point, right? In other words, you might have thought that whenever the Torah provides rules for something, the Torah thinks it's a good idea, but maybe not. Maybe the Torah understands that there are different types of people. The ideal is the Shvila Zahav, the golden mean, to be moderate. But sometimes the Torah understands that it's not optimal to behave in a certain way. But even if you behave in a less than optimal fashion, and the Torah recognizes that people can't always behave in the most optimal fashion, but still, there should still be rules. So when someone wants to be an extremist, there are still rules. So the Rambam views the Nazir, the Rambam views the Nazir as an extremist, and he says that he frowns upon it, and he says that that's why you have to bring a sin offering. By the way, there's another way to understand why you have to bring a sin offering at the end of your state of Nazirus. What's that? Why else might you have to bring a sin offering when you finish being a Nazir? Any thoughts? Why else would you have to bring a Nazir? Not because you committed a sin until now, but because what? Look at the Ramban, the very next source. The Ramban says, V'tamachata sheyakriv ha-Nazir b'yom melos yemein Yisrael, lo nitzparis. The Ramban points out that the Chumash doesn't tell us why the Nazir brings a sin offering on the day when he finishes his status of being a Nazir. Al derech ha-psha, what's a simple understanding? You know when you're sort of doing something that's not so great? When you're done being a Nazir. Because now you are sort of, because now you were separated in holiness and your service of God. You until now were in an elevated status. Ideally, you should be a Nazir your entire life. So therefore, and that's why, and then skip a few lines, the Rabban writes the last few words, V'inehu tzar kapar b'shuvoli tamim b'tavas ha'olam. Why you bring a sin offering? To atone for what? The fact that you're lowering your status. So it's a very fascinating debate between the Ramban and the Rambam. The Rambam holds the sin offering reflects the behavior that you just engaged in, which is being a Nazir, whereas the Ramban says just the opposite. He says you were in a very holy state until now, and now you're returning to your mundane state, and so you need a little kapara for that. But according to the Rambam...
How do you square that with your comment earlier, where you said that extremism is not a good thing? The mean is the gold.
So I've done. Who says it's always the case? The Ramban doesn't necessarily agree with that. I'm saying that's a point of contention. In other words, you could say that you should be someone who is generally moderate, and the Torah doesn't expect you to be someone who is such an ascetic, but there are people who could reach that level. And if they can reach that level, Baruch Hashem. Like I said at my outset, I said when it's just very funny because, I find that when people try to analyze this, is another good or bad, depending on your perspective on life in general, you tend to say, oh, this definitely makes sense versus this. Yeah, there are a lot of people who are very into moderation, which is a wonderful thing. And they'll follow the Rambam's understanding and they're going to say this is not an ideal. But we can't ignore the fact. And there are other people who are harif, who are sharp, and who like to make waves. Like, they feel that, you got to always strive. You always got to push yourself. You got to always move and go to one extreme, in a very holy way. And so that's like the Ramban. So I'd say they're different perspectives. Another negative perspective, that another evidence that a Nazir is bad would be the Gemara Nedarim, Daf Samach Amud Beis, where Rabbi Nassan Omer, Kol HaNoder, Ki'ilu Bana Bama, anyone who makes a neder, any kind of vow, in other words, above, restrict something, above and beyond what the Torah restricts, Ki'ilu Bana Bama, it's like you're building a backyard altar, which is frowned upon. And if you fulfill that, it's like you're offering a sacrifice on it. So again, that seems to say Torah has a lot of laws. You follow those laws. Don't start, adding restriction upon restriction. It's not great. It's like building your own backyard mizbeach, which is frowned upon. So again, we have some evidence that it might be good. The Torah provides rules for the Nazir. Seems like it's in response to the Sota. So you're trying to protect yourself from sitting, which seems like a good thing. And on the other hand, it seems like it's asceticism. According to the Rambam, it's asceticism. The Torah is not a fan of asceticism. And that's why you have to bring a sin offering. That's the way the Rambam understands it. And it seems like you're building your own private Mizbeach. No, you're supposed to go to the Beis HaMikdash to bring the sacrifice. Don't build your own, private Mizbeach. So that's sort of, you know, one way of looking at two sides to the nazir. But I think there's another perspective, and I think it's based on the following question. See, if the nazir, if the motivation of the nazir is only about asceticism, so why is it only no wine? Why not, you know, prohibition of meat? Why not, I don't know, marital intimacy? Maybe have some, you know, physical intimacy. Maybe, in other words, why specifically wine only if it's about asceticism? And also, what does asceticism have to do with the restrictions of tumah and haircuts? Right. So it seems, and again, the maybe what the Rambam is saying is maybe the only, you know, the nazir, the issue with the nazir with asceticism is specifically the wine, and maybe there's something else about the other two elements. But if it's all about asceticism, it seems strange that it's only about wine, and then you have these other two restrictions. So perhaps we can look at this institution.
Maybe Tuma has to do with the fact that you said that it was so punished and close to God that Tuma is the opposite side, so therefore he has to restrict himself from getting Tuma.
Right. So now you're saying that you just want to get close to God. You want to, okay, you want to purify yourself. So it's not simply so your asceticism is you want to withdraw from anything physical, and you want to focus on, it's not really so much asceticism, but your focus is on spirituality.
I don't remember who you quoted before, but you said that the reason he brings the fatwa is because he's giving up his spirituality, he's giving up level of spirituality.
Right, Ramban, right.
Tumah would be the opposite of that.
Right, right. So now as you could... Right. Now, as you could argue, you want to argue that Nazirus is a state of heightened spirituality. So maybe heightened spirituality means not so much physicality, no wine. And also, heightened spirituality means complete access to the Mikdash, and not and the opposite of the Mikdash of Kedusha is death, is Tumah. Okay, maybe. I hear. That wouldn't explain the haircutting, right? Would not explain the haircutting, correct.
Maybe it's related somehow to the Kohanim can't drink wine.
Right, maybe that. Okay, I hear. Let me sort of share an approach that I think includes all three elements. The Kli Yakar says the following, and it also fits in very well with the Gemara Masech Nedarim, which says if you make a neder, it's like you're building a private mizbeach. So, by the way, what are you doing? What are you really doing when you're building a private mizbeach? What's the issue there? What are you not doing? What are you doing?
Not with everybody else.
Exactly. The issue with building the private mizbeach is the shtibalization of Judaism, right? In other words, you want to serve God, but you're like, I don't want to deal with these other people. I'm my own guy. I want to have my own connection. You're separating from the community. Kli Yakar says exactly this. Hu al derech, this is in Perek Vav Halacha Beis, hu al derech, Shamu Chazal, I know they're Kilu Bar Obama. It's like if you make an edit, it's like you built a backyard Mizbeach. Umamar Zetimsa Olo Perish Yakar Ma'od. But come on, but Parshas Matos says in this passage, you'll find a beautiful explanation in Parshas Matos. Vizemaskim Laman, the Omar Shanazi Nikrachote. This fits in well with the approach that Anazar is a sinner. Vachet, who? What's the sin? Shabona Bama La'atzmo. That he's building an altar for himself, who poresh es atzmo mikol haolam linhog iser b'davar shekol nogim boheter, and you are separating yourself from the whole world to engage in something prohibited, with something that everyone else is allowing themselves to do. Kach nemar ki yafli shehu rotz elios muvdal umufrash mizulaso bone b'malatza. What's yafli? You want to be separate from the community. That's the issue. The issue of the Nazir is that he separates from the community. It's like building a private altar. If you think about it, what's wine? So wine is often something that people drink together, like social drinking. That's an activity that's done a lot. You know, people go for l'chaim, the people drink together. So if you, so that's that, that's a communal activity. Even I would even argue that going to a funeral, right? You're with someone in times of celebration, drinking together, and you're together in times of sorrow. You're there for someone in times of sorrow. If you're not going to come in contact with a maze, with a corpse, means you're not going to funerals. You're separating from the community. They're all crying over the loss of someone, and you're saying, I'm not going. You're separating from that. And truth is, even the wild hair. So normally, letting someone's hair grow is viewed as an antisocial statement geared towards separating ourselves from other people. I saw this quote from Wikipedia, so it must be true. Culturally, long hair, particularly amongst men, typically signals the individual separation from structures, although there are exceptions, such as the Thai people. Ways of life often viewed as more rigid, such as religious cultures, often have explicit rules regarding hair length. For example, one passage actually in the New Testament considers long hair shameful for men while encouraging for women. But the point is that wild hair is often associated with, like, oh my gosh, he's dressed so weird. So he looks so weird. He's like, you know, stay away from him. He's like, he looks a little creepy. So so letting your hair grow wild, people looking at you, they're like, oh, you're strange. I want to stay away from you. So wine, tuma, funerals, and groomed hair are all elements of communal activity and or behavior. See, what happened here? The Nazir sees the failure of the community. The Nazir saw the Sota, and he's concerned about his own personal spiritual growth. How can society let this happen? And as you're saying, well, this person did it. If it happens in our community, so that means that there's something wrong. We didn't educate ourselves enough, so much so that this is going on in the community. So he sees what's happening, and he's concerned, sees what's going on in the community, and he's concerned about his own personal spiritual growth. And I think the Torah's response to the Nazir is ambiguous a little bit. And I think maybe what the Torah is telling us, that if we blindly follow the community when something doesn't smell right, we should feel uncomfortable. We should want to become a Nazir when we see something like the Sota taking place. When we see there are problems and we just totally let it go and everything's fine and not a problem, it should make us want to say, to be afraid of our own personal religious well-being, that we're going to be impacted negatively by the community. We should be concerned about that. But at the same time, we still bring a sin offering. If we break from the community on a particular issue, then we should also feel uncomfortable. In other words, I think the Torah sometimes sort of doesn't take a definitive stand, because the Torah is aware that there are advantages and disadvantages for engaging in certain behavior. There's value and there are also drawbacks. And I think the Torah may want to us to evaluate that, you know what, there's a reason why someone will want to become a Nazir. And at the same time, there's a reason, there's a danger and a drawback to becoming a Nazir. And that's why the Torah provides rules and at the same time tells you, well, you got to bring a sin offering. And it's not great to be an ascetic. And perhaps the message is the following for us. That on the one hand, if we constantly feel a little bit on the edge, never completely sure, vacillating back and forth between being a community follower and a nonconformist, considering both our individual spiritual needs and the needs of the community, then I think we know we're on the right path. If we're comfortable always with what the community does and never questioning, never holding them in check, that's not so optimal. At the same time, if we simply say whenever the community is something we don't agree with, that's it. We don't want to have anything to do with more with the community, then it's also a problem. And maybe that's Gila's point, which she mentioned at the beginning of this year, that's why a Nazir is not forever. But sometimes maybe we need like a shot of adrenaline and a spiritual infusion just to shake us up a little bit. It's okay to be shaken up a little bit, but you have to understand there's a price to pay as well. And as long as we're conscious of both factors, then I think perhaps that's what the Torah wants us to think about. Be concerned about our own spiritual well-being at the same time, remembering about the power of the community as well. So, that.
All right, good.